Hello, and welcome to another episode of Progressive Opinions of Color, a podcast that seeks to create space for people of color in conversations about economics, politics, and culture. I'm your host, Nancy Wu. And just a quick announcement that right now, it is just me doing this podcast right now. Podcasting is definitely a very hard work, and when Sonia, our co-host, is ready to come back, then we will definitely be excited to have her back. But so for the next few episodes, it's just going to be me talking, and I'm really excited today to introduce you guys to our guest, Lillian So, who is a badass, and I learned so much from her. Lillian is an entrepreneur who has her own coaching program that has attracted an international audience and has helped so many people transform every aspect of their lives through their biology, their mind, their mental health, their communication, and manifesting who they truly are. And so you will hear all about that in this interview where we talk about everything, how she got to where she is today, how she built her business and found her own success, and how does she see the world in a way that allows her and her clients see the world and manifest their own truths and their biggest successes. So really excited and hope you guys feel very inspired by this. Make sure to, of course, rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on any platform that you use. Also, I'm always looking for producers and editors. If you are interested, feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram or on POC Podcasts Instagram. All the links will be below. And now let's get the conversation started. Hi, Lillian. Thanks so much for joining Progressive Opinions of Color today. Really excited to have you on the podcast. So why don't you start off by telling everyone a little bit about yourself and what you do and just where we want to get started.
First of all, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate just this opportunity to like have a conversation with somebody who's just as progressive and open and willing and just down, you know, as I'd like to think I am. So that's always just kind of like a good place to start. So yeah, I mean, my name is Lillian. I'm a Korean American daughter of immigrants. I was born and raised in Chicago. I currently live in San Francisco. I've been out here since 2007. I wear a lot of hats. You know, I'm a yoga therapist. Some people call me a life coach. You know, I started my career in fitness. I think of myself as a healer. I think of myself as an integrator and a transformation coach and a facilitator. At the end of the day, like all labels aside, like you can call me all those things because I do literally all of those things. But I like to consider myself just like a one-stop shop for you to get as healthy and happy as possible. Like healthy, like physically, energetically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all of that. And happy from the inside out, you know, just really understanding what it actually means to feel fulfilled, to be tapped into abundance, and to just like live a good life. That's what I help people do, you know. So people, and in particular, I will say, like, and in particular, I work with high achievers. And what do I mean by that? I work with, you know, busy professionals, high achievers. I work with people that kind of mirror me in a lot of ways, you know, like grew up, you know, doing all the things that we're supposed to do to get to where we think we're supposed to get to, right? Checking off all the boxes, go to college, you know, get good grades, get a good job, you know, make good money, like be stable, you know, check, 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 make sure that your parents are proud of you and feel like, you know, they raised you right, you know, and did all the things. And at the same time, like you kind of get to a point where you feel like, with each checkpoint I cross, I almost feel like something is missing. You know, like I did the thing that I was supposed to do. I got the job. I got the promotion. I'm making 6 figures. I'm ready to buy a house. Like I've done all these like life things that I was told was going to make me, you know, successful and worthy and valuable and happy in the world. But I still kind of feel like something is missing. And I feel like, you know, like I could be healthier. I could be happier. Like I feel like my relationships could be better. I don't even know what I need, but I just feel like I could feel better and be more confident. If you are that person, that's the people that I work with. It's usually those folks when they're at that point that they come and find me. So with that said, it's like, you don't have to know what it is that you're actually like looking for per se, but I'll help you find it. Right. And a lot of times it's just getting healthy, happy, fulfilled, and so forth. So I know that's a little vague, but that is literally what I do. It's like, hey, like whatever you want, like you want to upgrade your life, like I got you. Like, just tell me what you want. Just tell me how you want it to be better, and I will get you there. That's literally what I do.
Wait, Lillian, I feel like I'm your ideal demographic for that, because what you just described is totally what I'm going through right now. Like, immigrant parents have told me everything to do from childhood to adulthood. I'm like, I'm checking all these boxes. The last ones left are like, get married and have kids. And I'm like, I'm going to push those off for a bit, and like, you can deal with it. But even after like checking off the other boxes, I'm like, you know, work is good. Everything is good. Like, my friends are great. Like, I feel fulfilled, but like, there's still like, what is the higher meaning of all of this? I've tried to put a lot of that energy into my creative projects, like this podcast. But aside from that, I feel like that's a question that a lot of us in our 20s are asking ourselves all the time, especially in like a capitalist society that makes you feel like you always have to be more productive and like do more. Like, if you're accomplishing this much, then there's even more you can do. And it's like, where does it end? But I'm so curious, like, how did you overcome all of that and get started in your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love that you said that, because, you know, when you said, oh my God, I feel like I'm in your demographic, I was like, you know what? You probably are. Like 100%. Like, as soon as you came, actually, like, we're on Zoom. So like, as soon as you came, I'm like, oh my God, look at you. You're so cute. I'm like, you're exactly, you know, to kind of answer your question of, you know, how did this kind of journey start with me? I have to say, like, I look back, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I look back and I had a lot of success at an early age. I really did. And what's funny is I grew up in the inner city of Chicago, immigrant parents. Like, we were not upper class. Like, we were like full blown, straight up inner city, middle class. Like, I have a lot of trauma around going to a Korean American church in the suburbs and being completely shamed and like, basically like othered by all the kids in the suburbs, like my whole life growing up, like, you know, being told that I was like poor and ghetto and like less than and all that. And so it's not like I was like this like perfectly groomed kid, you know, that was like given tutoring and like whatever, like that wasn't even actually my story. So I actually never identified as like this high achieving, like, okay, like I better like get straight A's and do all the things. I actually never really identified with that when I was younger. But I kind of was a version of that in my own way. And now looking back, I'm like, holy shit. Like, okay, like I was actually one of the only ones out of my entire graduating class of high school to like literally like the only like so I went to an inner city high school, and it's kind of like a known thing inside of my high school that like nobody really goes to college. You don't really get good test scores. You know, you don't really get good ACT, SAT scores. And so like, even when I told people that I was going to go to U of I, when I told my own teachers in high school that I was going to go to U of I, they were all like, oh my God, Lillian, you're going to be like the 1% that actually makes it out of here. And I was like, what the fuck, for real? It's like that. Okay. That's weird. When I got to college, like it still didn't even dawn on me. And I got to college and I was like, oh my God, like everyone's so smart. Like people know how to study. Like, oh my gosh, like what am I going to do? And I just figured it out. And I just hung in there, you know, and it was hard for me, but I figured it out and I hung in there and I busted my ass. And then next thing you know, by the time I was graduating from college, I was already working. I was like deep into the fitness industry already. I was working full time by the time I graduated. I was already like coordinating and moving my way up to management, like right out of college.
Wow.
And I didn't even know that that was like impressive. I guess because I was just like doing what I felt like I had to do to like make it, you know, like it was coming from a place of like survival mentality. It was coming from a place of like what I now look back and identify as like immigrant survival mentality. Just like, you got to do what it takes. You got to just hang in there. You just got to survive. You just got to make it. And so I did a lot of things at a really early age. Like, I worked my way up into management by the time I was like 22, 23. I opened up my own studio with a friend, a fitness studio, when I was like 23.
Oh my God, so badass.
Yeah. And like, and I didn't even think that was like a big deal. Like, I look back and I'm like, damn, Lillian, I can't believe you did all that. Like, that's fucking crazy, you know? And by the time I was like 24, I legit had like a quarter life crisis. Because I achieved so much of what I thought was going to take so long. And so I was like, oh my God, this can't be it. Like, there's got to be something that's next. So then I uprooted everything and moved to California. I moved to San Francisco. And I was like, all right, I'm going to start all over. If I can make it here, I can make it anywhere because it's California, it's expensive, whatever. So I just rebuilt everything, worked my ass off, like, again, from scratch, worked my way up, like, you know, started as a personal trainer, started doing all the things, built my business back up, you know, working in high-end clubs, having amazing, you know, like high-end clients, and like the whole thing was all fancy, you know, it's all fancy. And I did it all. And I'm like living in San Francisco and doing the thing. And then like, after a couple of years of that, I was just burned the fuck out. I was just like, okay, I did what I said I was going to do. I'm stable. I'm making good money. Like I got it. I even made it through the housing crash. That was like back in like 2008, 2009.
Oh man.
I moved out to San Francisco and then the housing crash happened like literally like a year later. And so there was even more pressure, right? Because everyone around me is like, oh my God, like everything's falling apart. And people were, my own clients were like, oh my God, are you going to be okay? Like people are going to stop seeing you because, you know, personal trainers and like luxury services are going to be where people, you know, cut out the most. And that like, I don't know what it is, but it like did something to me. And it made such an imprint on my brain that I was like, no, I will not. And I just went into overdrive and I just busted my ass even more. And
wow.
ironically enough, that year of the housing crash, I made more money than I had ever made up until that point in my life.
That's amazing.
I was like in my mid-20s, but I just killed myself over it, you know? And I was like, I can do this and I'm going to achieve it. And I'm going to make it. So yeah. So basically like after all those years of kind of starting, like already doing all the things really early on, you know, back in Illinois, back in Chicago, and then coming over here and doing it all over again, I was just fucking burned out again. And I was at that point, like, what am I doing? Like, okay, like, is this really, okay, now that I'm actually making money, now that I'm actually stable, now that I actually don't have to worry about paying my bills and I'm living the life, like, what am I going to actually do now? Like, what's next, you know? And it was at that same time that I was finding myself repeating patterns in relationships, in my dating life. I was also recognizing that I was getting into relationships with people that I felt like I had to fix. I was getting into relationships where I felt like I had to save the person that I was dating. And I was like, there is something wrong with this. Like, I don't think this is the way it should be. Like, I don't know what's going on, but like, I feel like I need to do something about this. And so that was kind of like where the turn started. It was like at that point where I was like burned out and I was starting to recognize patterns in my relationships. Like that was the indication that something was wrong and I had to do something. So it was at that point that I started, as cliche as this sounds, I started working on myself. So I like went into therapy. I enrolled into yoga teacher training. That blew my mind. I became a yoga therapist and just kind of went like super deep into all of the self-development, healing, self-discovery work. And it just completely changed my life and completely changed the way I think about everything and how I approach everything. And then that naturally obviously bled into what I do for a living, because at that point I was like, oh my God, these were the missing pieces that I always intuitively knew was missing, but didn't know. Like for real, for real. And so after I got all the training, after I went and went through my own, you know, healing, discovery, growth process, I was like, I got to put all this together. I got to figure out a way to put all of these things together. And this is where it got really tricky for me, right? Because I started out as a fitness professional, and that part is really important. But then the fitness side doesn't really talk about the mind-body side. And like the spiritual aspect of like yoga. And then the yoga side doesn't really talk enough about like the importance of being in the body. And like, it doesn't really go into like more like life things. Like there were just so many pieces that helped me come to a place of completeness and wholeness and contentment that I was like, this was my literal thought. I was like, who in the world can possibly one afford literally financially afford to go through the process that I went through? Cause legit, like if I have to tally it all, I've probably spent about $100,000 on my own journey of like going to get trained, getting certifications, going through my own like healing sessions, going through my own like getting my own mentors and guides and all. I've spent hella lucci. Like, who's got that? Like, no one's gonna do that, you know?
Yeah, I can barely afford my therapist.
Exactly, you know? And so that was kind of like my thought. I was like, who can actually afford to go see a trainer, a life coach, a therapist, a healer, like a psychic, a wizard? Like, who can afford to do all of that all the time when that is actually what you need, in my personal humble opinion? And so that was why I started getting to work. And I was like, I got to figure out a way to tie all these things together, integrate them all together, and turn it into some kind of digestible system and process so that people can access and learn what I learned in not 10 years. So that's how I ended up doing what I do now. And it works, and it's popping, and it's blowing up, and people's lives are changing, and it's amazing. It's crazy.
Wow. Wait, that's amazing. So you're combining like all of those, basically taking from your own experience and combining all of the factors that were important to you into one thing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So like the way that I see it is like, if I had to simplify it and break it down even more, there's five pillars to my method, right? So like my last name is So, I call it the So method. So the five pillars that we have inside of that is one, biology, right? Because like you live in a physical body, you are a physical being. You have a beating heart, you have a brain, you got to take care of that shit, you know? So there's the biology portion. Then there's two, your programming, your mindset, how you've been wired, what you've learned, what limiting beliefs you have, what stories you tell yourself, what is your operating system? That's your programming. The third part is your inner compass. Like, what's your truth? Do you know what makes you valuable? Do you know like what your truth is? Do you know what guides you? Do you listen to your intuition? Do you trust yourself? That's your inner compass. And then the fourth pillar is communication. So one of the things that I picked up along my own personal journey was I became a communication facilitator, nonviolent communication. So that changed everything for me because I realized that so many of my issues in my relationships really just came from me not understanding how to actually communicate in a healthy way. Mm. And so communication for me is its own pillar. And then the fifth pillar is manifesting all that woo woo shit. Cause you know, like it's real, like you are the co-creator of your life. And I wish somebody would have told me that when I was younger, you know, I wish somebody would have told me like, no, for real. Like you are connected to the universe. Like energy is a real thing. And whatever you believe, whatever you want to put your intention towards, like it is possible for you to co-create that. And there is a way you can make that happen. Like, I wish somebody would have told me that when I was in my early 20s. Otherwise I wouldn't have just busted my ass all willy nilly for, you know, for so long and burned out, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like all the things that I bring together into my work when people work with me.
I have so many questions about that. Like, what does it mean to manifest your dream life? And like, how do you unpack people's baggage? There's just a lot. You also mentioned a lot of things I'm super interested in, like your childhood. I had the same experience at just a really mean church in the suburbs.
Oh my God, I'm so glad. Yes. You see, like this is healing for me too, because I was like the black sheep,
mm-hmm. you know,
going to the church. Like I was from the city. I was sent off to a suburban church. And, you know, like everybody there was like perfect and was like all like, you know, like they were all great. They were like just good kids and they all got good grades and went to suburban schools and they were all perfect. And I was like this fucking inner city delinquent, you know, compared to them. And I just felt like so lowly and it was really traumatizing, you know, like what was your experience like?
I just felt like I couldn't be myself there. I had all these political beliefs because I had a lot of friends in middle school and elementary school who were like pro gay marriage, and like our church started like getting in our heads about what to vote for, and that just contradicted everything that I had believed was good or right. And that really made me like rethink things, because I was like, wait, this is, I mm-hmm. thought like this was interesting to learn, but it's getting to my politics. And then that on top of that, I didn't have any friends at church because everyone was like, they seemed like they were good and perfect in that way. Like they were doing things right. And I just felt like I was failing because I didn't see the world the same way that they did.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a lot of the same stuff just in different ways. Like I felt it more from like a socioeconomic class kind of way. And I think it sounds like for you, it was like belief system and like what's right and what's moral and politics and things like that. But I can relate to all that too, because for me, like growing up in the inner city, you know, like it's just a little different, you know, it's a little more progressive. It's just, you know, like I grew up with nothing but like folks of color. And it's just a different thing when you're like in the city, you know, with the working class and, you know, in the middle class. And then, you know, your politics, the way that you see things are just a little bit different, you know, when you're out there. So yeah, I totally get that. And especially what you said about like, this is the right way to do things. There is so much of that in the church, and it just kind of fucks you up because you're like, wait, hold up. What? You start to doubt like, wait, like, is there something wrong with me? Like, is that the right way? Like, am I a bad person? You know, like that whole thing comes into play. So yeah, I totally feel you on that. So how did you kind of like recover, or how did you come out of that?
Well, I just stopped going to church, and my mom is really religious and she still wishes that I would go, but I just became,
oh my God, same.
I was like, it was in middle school. I was like, all right, this religion thing is not for me. And then I stopped going to church, and now I'm like, it would be nice to like have some guiding principle or something beyond this earth to believe in, to like make meaning of. And I think the universe is so big. There's so much that we don't know. I've been reading a lot about higher dimensions and like what's the 10th dimension and what's in the stars and like what does it mean? Like Einstein's theory of relativity and all those things. I was like, there's so much unknown. Like we can know everything on this earth through science, but there's so much that we don't know outside of this earth. And just like believing in something besides what we can observe has been really interesting. And it takes you away from just like being so much inside your head.
For sure. You know, I love that you're bringing that up actually, because I was the same way, right? So like the church kind of like threw me for a loop. It like totally, you know, it was like, it got me all jaded and all that stuff. Right. And, you know, there was a part of me where I was like, this is trash and like whatever, like there's such hypocrites and blah blah, and I, you know, stop going and all that. And I will say, you know, once I started my own healing journey and my own self-discovery journey and whatever, and like kind of redefining what spirituality means to me, redefining what it means to be connected to something bigger than you, realizing, you know, what it actually means to, you know, be one and feel connected to universe and divine power and all of that. It's interesting because in some weird way, I almost feel like while I don't go to the Christian church anymore, and that's like not necessarily something that I practice, I actually feel more connected to a sense of God. And I mean that by universe, higher power, divine source, something that's guiding, something that's pulling, something that I cannot understand that has my best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. I feel more connected to that than I ever did when I was actually going to church. And I think that is the beauty of really doing inner work and self-discovery work and like doing like the work to understand yourself and understand like your own like purpose and your own truth. All of a sudden it really does actually help you feel more connected to something bigger than you than maybe church ever would have, you know? And on top of that, I will say I have clients who are Muslim, who are Christian, who are like all walks of life, all religions, all backgrounds. And so many of them have also told me that by doing the work with me, by taking care of themselves, by getting to know who they are, by truly tapping into their truth and their connection to, you know, higher power within themselves, it's actually deepened their faith and their own like religious practices. And it's actually helped them feel more connected to, you know, how they connect to God or whatever. So it's really fascinating. And I think that that's kind of where things can come full circle, you know, for some folks.
That's really amazing. I'm so curious about like, what are some of the common themes that you talk to your clients about and have them work on? When we were emailing back and forth, you had mentioned that you help ambitious people rewrite self-sabotaging narratives that are holding them back from what they want. And you also help people manifest their dream life. And I'm curious to know more about those topics.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like, oh my God, where do I start? So everybody has a dream, and we all relate to them differently, right? Some of us are like very aware of them and we go after them. Some of us are, you know, unaware of them. Some of us, you know, have them, but don't think it's possible. If you really, really sat down, every single person has like a dream life, something that they envision of like, you know, I would really love to spend my time doing this. I would really love to spend my life doing this. This is what I would really love to feel. This is what I would really love to experience. This is what I would love to have in my life. Everyone's got that. And I think, and I genuinely believe that the only thing that's holding you back from actually tuning into and acquiring and manifesting that for yourself is your belief system. It's just whether or not you believe that that's actually possible for you. And so many of us, all of us, we've all been programmed from the time we were kids. You know, we've all been programmed by society, by our parents, by what we've heard from our teachers. Like, we're literally constantly being bombarded with information and stories and influences our entire life. And so all of that over time helps us develop these conclusions about what is and what isn't, right? And so if, for example, like this, you know, this is kind of like a simple way to look at it, but like if you've been told your whole life, oh, that's for rich people, that's not for people like us, or like, oh, that's like only for white people, or that's only for people that are like X, Y, and Z, like, you know, you'll never be able to have that because you didn't have X, Y, and Z, or you know, that's not realistic for you. If you've literally been told things like that, you're going to eventually create a belief and a conclusion that that's the truth. And you're going to operate from that place. And you're going to design your life around that, because your belief system is what affects your behaviors. So if you believe, right, like, oh, that's not realistic, I shouldn't even bother, then what do? You just pick the safe job. You don't go after your dreams. You don't think about leaving your job and starting your own business. You don't think about like doing the scary thing and like packing up, you selling all your things and going backpacking for a year, because that's not realistic. You've been told your whole life what is and what isn't. You've been told what's right, just like we were talking about the church. Mm-hmm. You've been told what you're right. So those beliefs, these are all these limiting beliefs. These are all these stories. These are all these self-sabotaging thoughts that we tell ourselves constantly that end up holding us back from actually what we want. And so the work to get to actually creating that dream life is first identifying, is that even true? Who told you that? Who taught you that? Like, what are these things that you actually think about yourself? Is that really true? What would it actually look like to change those beliefs? What would it actually look like to change those stories? And how could that actually make you create a different reality for yourself? Because I know for me, the minute that I decided that I wasn't going to, and not a knock on personal trainers, okay? Throughout my entire 20s when I was personal training, I had a nagging thought in the back of my head. Lil, this isn't what you're going to want to do for the rest of your life. You're going to have to figure it out. Like, this isn't what you want. This isn't it. Like, what are you going to do with your life? And there was a conflicting belief between me. Like, oh, well, you know, like, can you even do anything? Like, you know, maybe you should do it safe. Maybe you should go back to teaching. Maybe you should do all these things that maybe your dad told you. And I just had to just say, no, like, I actually believe that it's possible for me to create something that doesn't exist, that's never been done before, to build a six-figure business, a multi-six-figure business, a seven-figure business. Like, I have to believe that that's possible. And like, it's from that place of belief now that I can take action. If I don't even have that belief in the first place, I'm going to go after it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it safe. You know, and so that is why your limiting beliefs and what you tell yourself and your thoughts are so interconnected with actually creating a life that you want or don't want. Does that make sense?
But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I want to turn the question back on you. What were the limiting beliefs that you had growing up? Who told you these, and what did you have to unlearn in order to get to where you are now?
Oh my God, so many stories. So when I... Thank God I've always had a little bit of a rebellious streak. Like, thank God, since I was a kid. I remember, let me start with college. I remember I found out that there was a way that you could be a doctor, but like not like a traditional doctor, that you could be like kind of like a holistic doctor, a DO. Like I'd always, for some reason, ever since I was younger, I've always been interested in things that weren't like very traditional. Okay. And so I remember telling my dad, I was like, I got accepted to U of I to, you know, in the school of applied life sciences. So that means that I could actually do pre-med. I was like, but I don't care about being a regular doctor. I found out that there's this like option to be like a DO. And I told my dad about it. My dad was like, it's so weird. This is so not like an Asian parent. But my dad said, why would you want to do all of that? That just sounds like so much work and a lot of money. He's like, why can't you just be a teacher? Just be a teacher.
Wait, what?
so weird, right? So weird. And he was like, why don't you just be a teacher? You'll get summers off and it's safe and it's stable. Everybody needs teachers everywhere. My dad told me that from his own place, his own mindset of just do what's safe and secure, right? Just do what's going to be guaranteed, right? Because everybody needs teachers. You get summers off. It's easy. It's stable. You get a pension, etc. So my dad was speaking from a place of his values, his concerns, etc. Okay. And I remember at that time thinking, that's so weird that my dad would say that. But at the same time, I was kind of like, it kind of like deterred me from like the whole doctor thing. And I was like, okay, all right, whatever. That's weird, but all right, fine. And it just kind of always stuck with me. Then I went, got my degree, exercise physiology, studied what I wanted to study, realized that I didn't want to go to med school, realized a bunch of things that I didn't want to do. I started working while I was in college, you know, started doing things that I love, which was like teaching group fitness and personal training and things like that. And then I quit my job, and then remember how I told you that I opened up a studio?
Mm-hmm.
It was a small little fitness studio, a small little boutique fitness studio. It was not fancy whatsoever, but it was my own thing. It was not working at the gym for an employer. And I told my dad, and he was like devastated that I quit this like secure job, right? He came and visited the studio, and he literally cried and told me that it was a shithole.
Oh my God.
He was like, this is a shithole. I can't believe you left your job to do this. He's like, I'm so worried about you. And here's the thing, like my dad was always very worried about how I would end up because he never trusted, like, because I didn't fall in line with all the like traditional good girl things. And I was always rebellious. He was always concerned about like the decisions that I would make and like how I would always end up. So like, even with that, I was like, oh my God, like, did I make the wrong decision? Did I fuck my life up? And then when I decided to move to San Francisco, it was the same thing. He was like, what are you going to do? Are you crazy? Like, you don't even have a, I lied to him. I literally told him because I knew that he would know what this company was called. Cause he's like, hella like immigrant dad. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like, dad, don't worry. I have an interview at Google. They're going to hire me. It's fine. I fucking told my dad I was going to get a job at Google. Just straight lied to his face. And he was like, okay, fine. And he like kind of trusted me. But to answer your whole question, pretty much my whole life, my dad was always afraid of me making bad decisions and always wanted me to do the thing that was safe. And so even though I always took little rebellious steps throughout my journey, when it really came down to it in my like mid-20s and like late 20s, when I finally decided to take like the leap for real and go into entrepreneurialism, I was scared. I was fucking scared because I was told safety and stability over everything, right? So it was during that time, because of those things that he told me, that was why I burned myself out. I worked myself to the bone no matter what. And I took clients that I didn't even really like. I held on to jobs that I didn't even really care for because I knew I was going to make the money. And so that's really where I saw my own limiting beliefs play out. So even though I was quote unquote successful and made good money, I was doing it in a way that exhausted me. And that it was actually coming from a place of fear, not actually coming from a place of, oh my God, this gives me so much joy and fulfillment. So that's how that played out for me specifically.
I mean, I'm curious, like, even how you have all this energy to do all of that in the first place, like opening your own studio in your early 20s. You've done so much more in your early 20s than like most people have done in their 30s. And now you're doing even more. Like, where did that motivation come from? And did you have to change that motivation in any way when you were manifesting your life that you currently have?
For whatever reason, this idea that the only thing that's standing between me and my unlimited potential is just my belief. I believe that to my core. Like, I don't know what it is, but that fucking hits. Like, I believe that as the truth. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that that is the truth. I have no doubt in my mind that that's exactly right. And so for me, I'm like, well, if that's the truth, if legit, I can do whatever I want as long as I believe I can do it. If that's true, then let's fucking go for it. And so I push myself to believe that I'm capable of doing anything. And with that said, like, I meet myself where I'm at, right? So like, there was a point in my life where that belief was, I believe that I'm capable of building a six-figure business from scratch, right? It's not like I was thinking about being a billionaire when I was only making $70,000 a year. You know what I mean? So like, it's like, so I am always like very much like realistic and I take it step by step. But I think to answer the question about that motivation comes from me realizing that I legitimately can do anything that I want if I actually just believe in myself and believe in the possibility of that. And I think for me, that's just so fucking cool and so exciting that, like, for real though, all I gotta do is just believe it. That's tight. And so I think that just fuels me because it's just so exciting to think of, like, all right, like, what else can I think is possible for me? Like, let's go. Like, what else do I need to like believe about myself that I didn't believe a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago? So I think just knowing that is true to me, I think it just fuels me. It just like hypes me up. I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, all I have to do is just like decide. All I have to do is just believe and decide that I'm going to like do that shit. And it's like, all right, I decided we better get going now. So it's like my belief drives my actions and my actions drives my belief and so forth. That is exactly what I teach my clients too. It's like, yo, like the only thing that's getting in your way is your belief system. If you can believe it, whatever you think and whatever you believe is what will affect your behaviors. So all the things that I do are nothing more than a byproduct of me acting on my belief system. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, I believe I can open a studio. No big deal. Well, I believe I can move to San Francisco. No big deal. Let's do it. You know? And I feel like there is a pressure that I put on myself of like, well, you already decided that this is what you were going to do. You better go for it. you said you believe it. Like, do you believe it or not? You know? And I feel like that in itself is also it's like a form of self-belief and self-love too, right? It's like, no, I believe myself. So I'm going to keep taking the actions to back up this belief in myself because that's how much I trust myself. That's how much I love myself and so forth.
That's really motivating. It reminded me of, so in college, I studied a lot of philosophy and existentialism was one of my favorite branches. And it sounds like people say existential crisis and it sounds depressing, but it's actually the idea is that in your life, any situation can be given to you and it's your freedom to change your situation or change how you feel about that situation. So say, I don't like my job. Well, I can change jobs. I can quit and not have a job. I can move to a different city. I can look for other jobs. Or I can like my job if I don't leave. But I can't just stay in my job and hate it and think that I have no other choice. And that, like, I find it's very similar to the idea that you can do anything. The only thing besides you, like, in the middle is your beliefs. But there's also this other branch within existentialism where Simone de Beauvoir, who is a feminist, she wrote The Second Sex, and she's a feminist goddess, I guess. But she wrote this counterpoint about how people who are oppressed don't have that same kind of freedom, because there are things outside that will, your situation as a member of like an underrepresented minority in society is that there are more hurdles for you. And sometimes you can want to change your situation, but you're not allowed to. So have you faced any situations where as a woman, as an Asian American, or any part of your identity where you felt like there were more roadblocks to you than to someone with a different identity, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely felt it through various times of my life, you know, here and there. And I used to actually tell myself that too. I used to actually tell myself that, like, oh, if I was a white man, things would be easier. If I was X, Y, and Z, this would have gone faster. This wouldn't have been so hard. This wouldn't have been X, Y, and Z, whatever, right? To be completely honest, those thoughts are a little bit of a distant memory for me, because I have personally done a lot of work to remove all of those obstacles for myself. So I'm not gonna lie, like there was a time where I genuinely saw it all around me. Like I did see it as like, oh, I'm totally being perceived a certain way because I'm Asian, or like, oh, I'm totally being perceived a certain way because I'm a woman, or I can totally see why I'm like not getting this opportunity because I'm an Asian woman or whatever. And if I could really look back on those times, that's what I saw because that's what I saw. Does that make sense? And once I decided to, not to say like stop seeing those things, but stop focusing on those things and instead focus on just the way forward and focus on taking what I call radical responsibility for my own success and my own future, I kind of set myself free from a lot of those oppressions. And now, I don't really let that be part of my story, if that makes sense. I don't really let that be part of my identity. And I think that takes a lot of work, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect and I'm like, God, I'm so fucking enlightened and like, you know, whatever. Like, I'm just saying like, I have really, really gone out of my way to do a lot of work because I was that person. I totally was like, it'd be so much easier for me if I was this, if I wasn't that, if it wasn't for this upbringing, da, da, da. But like, honestly, like I just realized that just slows me down. And rather than putting my energy, it's like, I'm very particular about where I put my time and energy. So it's like, well, do I want to put my time and energy there? Or do I want to put my time and energy here, which is focused on owning my success, owning my progress, right? So now it's like, okay, like instead now where I focus my energy is 75 to 85% of my clients identify as AAPI or POC, which I am incredibly, incredibly proud of. And then I love my community. My community is fucking badass. They're beautiful inside and out people, so diverse. And now for me, I am all about putting my energy into empowering them and to helping them find their voice and helping them step into their radical responsibility and helping them change the way they think and their belief system and the way that I have changed my belief system and helping them discard any hang-ups or anywhere they might be wasting energy without realizing into these thoughts and into these beliefs that may be slowing them down, and instead helping them come into their power and focusing on like what is their magic and like focusing on how they are more than capable of creating the life that they want for themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my story on that. And I think you're kind of catching me at a very, very kind of post, you know, kind of feeling oppressed version of myself. So that's why I'm answering it in that way.
I think there needs to be more like people of color inspiring other people of color to go past that, because yes, there are systemic inequalities that will take generations to change. And yes, this person might have been racist, but us focusing on the fact that something was racist is not going to help us individually move forward. And yeah, we can like fight to change the system, and that's something that we're always going to be doing. But in terms of like, just because there is no woman or Asian American in the exact spots of my company doesn't mean I should think that it's not possible. Like, that should not be an excuse to do less, but rather we should focus on energy onto doing more independently of the obstacles that might come in between. And that's not saying that there are no obstacles. There are going to be obstacles for women, for people of color. But it's not something that we should be spending our energy in a way that's like negatively impacting us.
Yeah. And I'm an opportunist. So like, to piggyback off of what you just said, for me, I'm like, well, the fact that this company has never had an Asian woman in the C-suite means that that shit is mine. Like, that's the way I look at it. It's like, oh, word? Oh, they've never had an Asian woman in the C-suite ever in the history of the company? That's fucking tight. I'm gonna own that shit. That's mine. That's the way I like to look at it, right? So, like, rather than being part of the statistic, it's like, be the one that flips that shit, right? For me, like that, when you talk about, like, motivation, I'm like, that shit motivates me. I love that. I'm like, I always see the opening. I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, that's an opportunity right there. That's not an oppression. Let's flip it. Let's take it from oppression to opportunity, right? Let's change that.
Oh,
let's
damn.
Right? Let's flip the way that we look at it. Let's take that oppression and turn it into opportunity. It's like, rather than being like, oh my God, like, you know, this, my company that I work for, you know, doesn't have enough women in here, and that's fucked up. Actually, you know what? I have a good example. My client, Amy, my rockstar client, Amy, she works for PG&E, a utility company, old school fucking boys club in San Francisco. Okay. PG&E, like a utilities company. It doesn't get more boring than that. Right. She is a Vietnamese American woman in her early mid thirties. I remember when she first started working with me, she would tell me that. She would tell me how it's a boys club, predominantly white men, et cetera, da, 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 da. She's been doing the work. She's been putting in the work with me. She's been coming into her power. She's been finding her voice. I've been giving her the tools, et cetera, et cetera. She is now moving herself up into management. She is now hiring her own team of nothing but POC Asian American people, right? She is moving herself up into a position of management and power. And recently, in honor of AAPI Month, she wrote an article that went out to the entire company, PG&E, of like tens of thousands of people. She wrote an article about why Asian Americans should not be ashamed in asking for help. So rather than looking at it as, my company is just a fucking old school utilities company, like with just a boys club, like I need to get out of here. She was like, you know what? I see an opportunity for me here. She's like, fuck that. That's mine. I'm going to go get that shit. And she did. She put in the work. She started speaking up for herself. She demanded more money. She became a supervisor. I think she manages like 11 people. And I'm pretty positive, like every single person, most of them that she's hired are all Asian American men and women or POC or something like that. You know, that's tight. Mm-hmm. That's tight. She could have said many years ago, like, man, fuck this company, it's so white and old school and out there, I'm gonna go somewhere cool and startup and progressive and whatever. That's fine too. She could have done that too. But also on the flip side, she was like, you know what, nah, like, I'm not mad at this company, like, it's cool, like, I'm gonna figure it out from here. And she found that gap and she filled it for herself. So that's kind of what I'm talking about, right? Of like, we can totally stay stuck in the oppression and become a victim of that, or we can see the oppression and use it as an opportunity to fill in that gap and just fucking be the boss. You know, it's like, well, shit, if your company's ever had a woman CEO before, you better get after that. That's yours for the taking. Are you kidding me?
I feel so motivated. I have one final question about what you were talking about. So how do you deal with failure? Say your client or you yourself are believing in something and want to achieve that goal. What happens, and how do you think, what's your mindset and process of thinking about it if it doesn't happen?
I love this question because, just like I said, I am an opportunist, right? So even if I like call something a failure, just like, it's usually more for fun. I say it to be funny. I genuinely never look at anything as a failure. I always look at everything as a lesson. What's the opportunity here? That's it. Because that's abundance mindset 101. That's growth mindset 101. That you never think of something as a loss, but you always look at something as an opportunity for gain. right? Because abundance mindset is about like more than you need, right? It's like, it's growth, right? You're always going up versus, oh no, I failed and now I'm less than. So if something doesn't work out for me, if something doesn't happen the way that I wanted, if something disappoints me, if something doesn't work out as I imagine, I always see it as like, okay, cool. That was a bad investment. But what did I actually gain from that? Like, there is a lesson to be learned from that. So for example, I recently made an investment to hire some people to help me with my business last year. I spent tens of thousands of dollars. It was total fucking waste. And it was, you know, it was a failure of an investment, so to speak, right? It was a bad investment and I didn't get what I thought I was going to get out of it. And I was very, very disappointed. And I felt like I lost a bunch of money. Well, instead of focusing on that, for me, I was like, well, now I know that I need to do X, Y, and Z homework moving forward. Now I know that this was so incredibly important for me to consider the next time I hire someone. Now I know that I have to listen to my gut on X, Y, and Z the next time someone proposes this to me. It's like I focus on all the things that I gained out of the situation that I didn't even know that I needed. And I think of it in that way. It's like coursework that you can't ever like get in like a traditional academic setting. You can only get it through life. So it's like, well, I didn't realize that that was how I was going to get an MBA in business, but here we are, right? And I just kind of accept it as like, I never see anything as a failure. I see everything as part of my journey and part of what was necessary for me to learn what I need to learn so that I can keep making the progress that I want to make. So never see anything as a failure. And okay, like let's say some things are a failure. Yo, man, the failures are where the growth and wins come from, right? Like I always say this about like, you don't know what a high feeling feels like unless you felt a low, right? So like you need to know what sadness feels like so you understand like, oh shit, this is joy. This is ecstasy. This is happiness. Like now I know because I know what the opposite of that is. And so in that same way, if we only felt success all the time, we wouldn't even appreciate that shit. It would just be like, man, whatever, this is just the norm. But it's like through those quote unquote failures where we're able to really recognize, oh my God, I fucking grew. Like I learned something. This is amazing. And that's really where the joy is. And so I guess the other thing that I want to add to that, which is such an important thing that I always want to deliver in my message in general is, you know how we're all looking for growth. I mean, I'm sorry. You know how we're all looking for fulfillment. We're all looking for happiness. We're all looking to feel that like sense of contentment. That happiness and contentment comes from growth. It's when we are not growing that we feel unhappy, whether we realize it or not. Think about it. When our bank account is growing, we feel happy. When our relationships are growing, we feel happy. When we're growing in the company, getting promoted, that's when we're happy. It's all growth. And so when you are not growing is when you feel unhappy. So I think a lot of times we think of failure is like a lack of growth, right? And we're like so down on ourselves. But what we have to realize is growth is what comes from like growth is what comes like from failure. Like failure is necessary for that growth. And so as long as you can see that like you are always growing through everything, whether it's quote unquote failure or not, like that's like where the real joy is, you know? And so even though it may kind of hurt and sting at the moment, just knowing that it's a guaranteed glow up from there is what also just keeps me going and keeps me excited. It's like, okay, well, that fucking sucked, but I know that all this means is that there's about to be a blow up around the corner. So I hope it comes sooner than later. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. That's a really amazing perspective. I want to just like write all of that on a post-it note and stick it on my wall or like as my computer background to just keep in mind because it's so true. I mean, I learned so much. Where can the listeners find you or potentially get in contact with you if they're looking for to work with you or like links and everything? I'll of course list them below, but like anything you want to share about that?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many ways to get a hold of me. I'm totally accessible. You know, you can follow me on Instagram @meetlillian. So you can email me Lillian at meetlilliansoda.com. You can Facebook friend request me. I have a free group where I do like weekly Q&As. Like this week, for example, we talked about dysfunctional relationships. We talked about trauma bonds and, you know, unpack some hard conversations with family members and parents and things like that. So, you know, there's just so many ways that you can learn from me. And, you know, you can literally just reach out to me and hit me up anytime, like slide through my DMs. That is literally how most people end up working with me, is just by starting a conversation. So yeah, don't hesitate to reach out, shoot me an email, follow me on Instagram, send me a friend request, or, you know, get inside my free group, because there's tons of resources in there. I would love to meet you, and I would love to, you know, get to know you and help you along your own personal growth journey as well. Of course, anytime.
That's awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I feel so inspired. I hope you guys did as well. And thanks for tuning in. Make sure to rate on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on any platform that you use. And tune in 2 weeks for our next episode. Bye.